The following is a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly presentation exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is sponsored by the Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network.
Good morning and welcome to Healthy Ulster Radio. My name is Vincent Martello. I'm Director of Community Health Relations for the Ulster County Department of Health and Mental Health, and I'm also Director of Opioid Prevention Strategy for Ulster County. And today we're going to be talking about the opioid epidemic and responses to it in Ulster County. As some of you may know, that Ulster County had the second highest rate of opioid fatalities in 2018, and since that time, we've put together some 60 plus community partners working on every aspect of confronting the epidemic, from reducing the supply of drugs on our streets to working on reducing demand through prescribing awareness and patient education and working with our young people in schools, and one of the most critical ones, which is treatment and recovery services. So we have with us today two guests from one of our really critical community partners involved in the treatment and recovery aspect of this. And their names are Eric D'Antrone. He's Associate Director of Regional Services for Arms Acres and Conifer Park, and Angel Duncan, who is a Clinical Director for Arms Acres Inpatient and Detox Programs in Carmel. She also holds a Master's in Social Work from Fordham and has been in the human services field since 2001, and substance abuse since 2008. So before we get into the details of the treatment programs, give us a little background on Arms Acres, if you would, Eric and Angel.
Arms Acres has been open since 1982. It first started with Winifred Arms and her husband, who also was in recovery from alcoholism. Once he reached his recovery, he had a mission to help others who were struggling. So when he passed away, then Winifred Arms opened Arms Acres and established it to be able to continue to help those who were struggling and in need of recovery. So Arms Acres has been established in Carmel, New York since 1982. And we continue to really strive to provide the most up-to-date evidence-based treatment modalities to everyone, especially in the tri-state area. We are a 191-bed facility with 39 of those beds licensed for detox and 152 beds licensed for rehab.
Mm-hmm. And is there a particular modality that you embrace in terms of treatment, your treatment philosophy or recovery philosophy, or is it really customized to each patient? How does that work?
It's very much individually based, wanting everything to be patient-centered and for it all to be coming from an evidence-based treatment modality. Then depending on the individual, then it's going to be individually based. You might have an individual that comes in, and depending on their circumstances and their needs, they might need to be in treatment for 28 days, whereas other individuals might only need to be in treatment or because they might work full time, they might have a family they need to return to provide child care, that we might be able to work with them for providing 7 to 14 days inpatient and then be able to step them down. Mm-hmm. But all of it is going to be on the individual needs and based off of what their goals are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to add to that, this is very much Vincent, this is very much shifting in our field right now, in the field of addiction treatment, where, you know, primarily we've come from out of, you know, years and years ago out of the AA traditions, and that was very much the modality in the 80s and 90s, and moving more towards like evidence-based practices, but that are geared towards abstinence being the goal. Mm-hmm. But more recently, you know, we're learning as an industry that there are multiple pathways to recovery, and mm-hmm. we have to basically offer multiple ways, multiple options to help people. Mm-hmm. That can have many, many different manifestations.
Can you give us some examples of what those other modalities are that have shown promise around the country and the world?
Well, I would say starting with MAT as a whole.
And what is MAT for our listeners?
So medication-assisted treatment. Mm-hmm. Looking back, even 5 years ago, we really were not focused so much on being able to look at the medication to help an individual in such their early recovery to provide them that stability, especially the 12-step culture. The 12-step culture looked at just abstinence-based, not looking at that you could use a medication to help you get that early recovery, whether it might be Suboxone, it might be methadone, but them using a medication to help them during those very early stages where they're going to struggle the most. That's where then some of our patients are coming in and they're not interested in the 12 steps. And we're okay with that. And that's where our culture in itself has shifted. And understanding that a patient needs to be able to drive that. If they're not going to be able to, if they're not going to be open to the 12 steps, then we're not going to be able to help them in that very beginning stages of their own treatment. One of the most known is Smart Recovery, which is very much based off of a cognitive behavioral approach. So just as an individual could go into a group therapy session and they could be getting cognitive behavioral techniques through that group session, then Smart Recovery is based off of the same techniques. A lot of our younger culture is really relying on the Smart Recovery framework, which is still a self-help group. Mm-hmm. It's still run by your peers, but you're going through it with an actual mission, with assignments once you leave out of that group for you to continue to work on until your next group, but you're still helping one another. Whereas with the 12 steps, you're helping one another, but you're not doing it so much with that clinical based background of that. And our younger generation is really striving to be able to have more tangible pieces out of it that they're walking away from. So it is one piece that we offer to all of our patients coming in, that yes, we do still bring in AA and NA groups, but they have an alternative that they can participate in. And during that time frame, they can participate in Smart Recovery.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In addition to that, we've been implementing for many years now motivational interviewing as an evidence-based treatment practice that's been shown to be very effective in treating addiction disorders.
Tell our listeners what that means, actually.
So motivational interviewing basically is recognizing that people might be in different areas of motivation, really. I mean, mm-hmm. in terms of they might be in kind of a what's called a pre-contemplative phase or a contemplative phase, maybe not yet thinking about making a change, mm-hmm. Or in the contemplative phase, thinking about making a change, but not quite ready to take action to address that, you know, to make that change. So recognize that people can be all along that continuum, and we have to be able to be nimble and be adjust and provide
kind of meet them where they are.
Correct, exactly, 100%. Yeah, mm-hmm. And so we're moving more towards the state has recently given us guidelines to bring more of a harm reduction approach with this. And again, recognizing that, you know, if somebody is in that pre-contemplative stage, again, not really aware of the things that need to change or contemplate, not yet making ready for action, that we can still help them, that we can still treat them, we can still offer them services. They're not going to be shunned or turned away. We're going to help still engage that person and connect them with other services that are also going to support them until they're ready to make to mm-hmm. take action to mm-hmm. make that change.
And keeping them from serious harm, from potentially fatal overdoses,
exactly.
or what have you.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. The key now is just maintain engagement. That is absolutely, mm-hmm. in terms, especially with the opioid mm-hmm. crisis now, is mm-hmm. keep people engaged. Keep people connected, mm-hmm. So that they don't slip through the cracks.
Yeah, I would imagine that can become fairly complicated at times, depending on the individual, right? Because when they're in a program such as yours, you know, and they're there for 28 days or however many days, that's a very defined community, very defined space with all of support services right mm-hmm. there. But someone in their lives where they have a myriad of challenges or situations or temptations or other things, or, you know, kind of the traumas that might have induced substance mm-hmm. use in the first place. Mm-hmm. So you're not in a really as controlled an environment. How do you deal with that?
So about 2.5-3 years ago, Arms Acres was awarded a grant, which Eric was one who spearheaded it for Arms Acres, and he helped supervise recovery coaches. Mm-hmm. And recovery coaches, although they've been around for quite a while, we're starting to see really the importance, especially on that next step of their recovery and how it can help them. During that time frame, then Eric spearheaded our two recovery coaches that we were able to bring up the percentages of an individual who, once they leave our treatment, treatment, they're leaving that structured environment, that we really were seeing a percentage of under 30% of patients make that first outpatient appointment to really focus on that next step of their recovery. Mm-hmm. That with Eric's supervision, we were able to make that over our seven counties that we were providing those services, get to, I believe, 100% of that first appointment.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And really, that's, I mean, the recovery process, as I understand it, could be a multi-year process, right? Mm-hmm. As you said, Eric, a person could be anywhere in that continuum, and you real and meeting them where they are requires a little bit more in-depth understanding of that particular individual's challenges, right?
Yeah, and there's no doubt that the there's more and more research bearing this out. This idea that there's something different that happens when you have someone with lived experience that can connect to someone who is struggling with addiction or mental health, in ways that clinicians just don't have that same kind of connection. It's a different yet equally important connection.
Right.
And so they're able to kind of walk with them, you know, walk alongside with them as they try to navigate, you know, life outside, right? Like getting to that first appointment, which we saw is such a critical transition point. You know, as Angel said, it was very low, and we thought we're actually not doing too bad. But to realize that if they don't connect to that next level of care, what happens to them? You know, they end up back. They end up in an emergency department. They end up, overdosing. And so we need to really look at those critical transition points. And peers have been very, very effective. And there's a lot of research, not only with our program, but across the state and country, of bearing that out.
Well, we want to learn more about peers, because I know that is a really important part of the recovery process. But first, we're going to take a short break. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio.
I love the way that picture looks. Can you move it to the left just a bit? Careful on the ladder.
Really? You know I'm always careful. Let me move it just a little bit more. Uh-oh!
Let's face it, accidents happen. When life takes an unexpected turn, you want your family treated at a full-service emergency room, where you'll find physicians who are board-certified in emergency medicine.
Let's get in the car. We're going to the ER.
Oh, but we'll be waiting for hours.
Introducing the 30 minutes or less ER pledge, only at Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital in Poughkeepsie and Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, members of the WMC Health Network. When you arrive in either of these emergency rooms, you'll be seen by a member of the care team within 30 minutes. Expert trusted emergency care without the wait. To read the 30 minutes or less ER pledge, visit wmchealth.org/ER30.
Well, that was painless.
Hey, I'm the one with the stitches.
No, I was talking about the wait.
Another way the WMC Health Network is advancing care. Here.
Technology moves at the speed of innovation. And today, that's lightning fast. So when you get your hands on the latest tech, don't forget to do the right thing with your old devices. Recycle them. The Consumer Technology Association and its members are making recycling your old tech device as easy as purchasing new ones. Just go to greenergadgets.org, type in your zip code, and you'll instantly find the responsible recycling location closest to your home. You'll also find lots of tips to simplify your recycling, like asking the store where you buy your new TV if they'll haul away your old one. Television sets, video game consoles, smartphones, tablets. They're all recyclable. Don't let them clog up your local landfill. Just visit greenergadgets.org. You're sharp enough to get the latest tech tools into your home. Now be responsible enough to get your old devices to the recycler. That's greenergadgets.org.
This is the sound of someone correctly installing a car seat. And this is the sound of someone incorrectly installing a car seat. Correctly? Incorrectly. Hear the difference? No? That's because installing a car seat incorrectly is terribly easy. So much so, 75% of adults install them wrong. For simple instructions on how to get it right, visit buckleupforlife.org. Ah, perfectly executed. Brought to you by Cohen Children's Medical Center.
Welcome back. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Today, we're talking to Eric Dentrone and Angel Duncan from Arms Acres in Conifer Park. They are the Hudson Valley, one of the Hudson Valley's premier treatment and recovery service institutions. And Eric and Angel, before the break, we were talking about the essential role of peer recovery coaches in the recovery process. What kind of qualifications or training do those folks receive?
So yes, this has been an emerging field. It's become really a career in the last few years in New York State, really recognized as something that's necessary, really part of the equation of providing care. So a person can become a certified addiction recovery coach, mm-hmm. And then with some additional experience, some hours, and some additional training, they can become what's called a CERPA, a Certified Recovery Peer Advocate. Mm-hmm. And actually, the state governing body, OASAS, is now making this requirement for outpatient providers to actually have one on site in order to do business
in New York.
So again, becoming more legitimate, becoming more recognized as important part of this, and shown again and again to be effective.
And we're using those folks in our, we just started medication, as you know, medication-assisted treatment program in the jail, mm-hmm. in our county jail for folks who are experiencing opioid and substance use disorder. And so the peers are very much a part of that process. They meet with the person before they actually get discharged, form that relationship, and then follow them after they get out so that they do make those appointments and can get their lives back on track and to the point where, you know, when they really are serious about the recovery process, they can be there to support them every step of the way. Well, with respect to Arms Acres and Conifer Park, so how does like say a family comes to you or an individual and they don't know anything about treatment and recovery and they want to know if you are right for them? What type of dialogue or exercise do you go through to do that? To make that determination?
I would say, so I'm the regional coordinator covering Ulster County for mm-hmm. us. Mm-hmm. So I'd be the point of contact for exactly that purpose. Mm-hmm. People can call me. I can meet with people in the field around anywhere in Ulster County, mm-hmm. Meet them for coffee. I could talk to someone, to an individual who's thinking about going into treatment but is not sure. Mm-hmm. Maybe they just have questions or they have apprehension about it. I mean, I can meet with them and talk to them, and family members as well. Same thing. They could call me or I can meet with them for coffee for those kinds of discussions. Mm-hmm. And then once someone is engaged in our care, then we actually have a family program that's really been one of our strengths for many, many years. That's really a full day of treatment where families and patients are together and really getting care together. Do you want to elaborate on what that is?
So many programs, they allow for family visitation. We do not allow family visitation. So typical programs, they allow the family to come in and they just, in a sense, sit in a room and they see each other for an hour or two. Whereas our family program requires the individual to participate in a full day psychoeducational series of lectures and workshops. We run our program either Tuesdays or Thursdays. They would have to be there by 9:30 in the morning and expect to be there until 4:30 in the afternoon. During that time frame, then they're going to go through different type of workshops to understand about the genealogy, to understand about the family dynamics of that. They're going to do communication exercises. They're going to explain and have confrontational exercises so that the family member as well as the individual understands what the other person was going through. At the end of every family program, it also ends with a Narcan training, wanting to make sure that the family member as well as the patient are all trained on Narcan, just in the event that they might come across somebody of their own, as well as somebody in their family member in the event that they might experience an overdose. Mm-hmm.
And Narcan, for our listeners' benefit, is a medication that reverses an overdose, right? So
correct.
That keeps that person alive, really,
yes.
to live another day and walk the path of recovery. So the typical stay you mentioned, was it around 28 days? Did I get that right?
Depending on the individual, mm-hmm. wanting it to be individually based. The typical detox length of stay is usually between 4 to 6 days, depending on what they're tapering off of and what they are withdrawing from. And then if they choose to come in as a direct admit or transfer then from the detox to a rehab, then the average length of stay is anywhere between 14 to 28 days. Mm-hmm. There are no barriers for insurance anymore. Insurance companies have now been mandated by OASIS to make sure that they are immediately given access, that they are not having to have pre qualifications and prerequisites. In the past, I could think of 10 years ago, anybody with an opioid diagnosis immediately was ruled out of getting even detox covered, let alone rehab.
Really?
All of those barriers are no longer there. Yes, there are requirements on a clinical side, and we do have our own documentation piece, but the patient does not need to worry about that. Insurance companies, especially state-funded Medicaid and managed Medicaid, do not have to worry about any of those barriers anymore.
Mm-hmm. Now, aside from the peer recovery coaches following people and helping to guide them, do you have an interaction with a client's subsequent providers or counselors so that there's some way of maintaining an awareness of how your patients are doing as they, you know, through the process of over time? Or
it's a great question. It's a really current question, Vincent. Mm-hmm, I mean, this is very much happening now. We are now part of what's called an IPA, an Independent Practice Association, in the Mid-Hudson Valley called CBHS, Coordinated Behavioral Health Services. Mm-hmm. So it's a network of 30-plus organizations, all providing behavioral health treatment in the community. Mm-hmm. So a variety of different mental health providers and substance use providers throughout the whole Hudson Valley, including many here in Ulster. And so we're building this network of how we're going to be communicating with each other, how we're going to be following people through the continuum. And that's really going to be our value in the future.
Right. And I know that there are a lot of communities working on a process to take individuals from the first overdose through the continuum of treatment and recovery, that process, so that people don't slip into the cracks as they go from one program to another, or from incarceration to back to the community, or what have you. Mm-hmm. And you, Eric, I know that you're a part of Integrated Ulster, which is an initiative of our Department of Mental Health, where we are trying to make sure that all agencies and programs in Ulster County are talking to one another, are welcoming patients without judgment, without stigma, so that patients do feel welcome. And even if you're not providing the exact services that they need, you can get them to the right place, which is absolutely critical.
Exactly.
And that other aspect of having the peers follow people, I think, is really important, because that time immediately after a program or after jail, I think, is, you know, one statistic was, if someone is getting treatment in jail and they don't have like a peer advocate or someone to follow up with them in that, or they don't get continuation of care, that in that 2 weeks immediately after discharge, they have 129 times greater likelihood of overdosing and perhaps dying. So it's really, really critical.
That's right. We were able to show with our peer project, for example, that if they had a peer, they not only made their first appointment 100% of the time, but they came back for a second appointment 96% of the time, and were still going to that outpatient program 76% of the time after 30 days.
That's amazing.
So if we can implement more and more ideas like that, I think we can move the needle on this.
Yeah, and I think too, you know, folks going back to their previous lives, or maybe, you know, they were in an environment where, you know, there are a lot of underlying issues, or a prevalence of alcohol, drugs, and other substances that, you know, that can really get somebody back into their old, unhealthy, you know, dangerous habits.
That's right.
So, Eric and Angel, so if folks want more information about Arms Acres, Conifer Park, where do they go, and then how do they get in touch with you?
Sure. So, multiple ways. So if somebody really urgently needs our services, we're open 7 days a week. Anybody can call our intake department. And then Arms Acres, that's 1-888-227-4641. We have a website, armsacres.com. We're on social media. And if somebody has more questions they're here in the community and they want to just talk, they just want maybe meet up, for a cup of coffee, if it's a family member or a person in need, someone who needs an assessment face-to-face, I can do that. We have multiple partners here in the county that I can meet with a person at. And my number is 646-529-7609.
That's great. Well, you guys are doing great work out there. Thank you so much. It's really valuable, and we really appreciate you doing it on behalf of our community and being a guest on our show. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and our community healthy and strong.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department, sponsored by Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next week.